Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are hoping to challenge you to experience your life and spirituality maybe in a new way. And my guest today, the long-awaited return of Susan Dugan. And I shouldn't put it quite that way. You know, there have been a number of reasons why I have not been doing interview shows over the last few months. You know, just so much going on and technical issues and all of that and schedules. But it's been a long-awaited return for me. So Susan Dugan is with me today, and she is a Course in Miracles teacher, and she's the author of multiple articles and books based on forgiveness and what it's like to live A Course in Miracles. And she has suggested, much to my dismay, I will admit, when I asked her, what do you want to talk about? She said, I want to talk about workbook lesson 181. I trust my brothers who are one with me. And I literally go, are you kidding me, Susan? And I'll tell you, because obviously, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, you know, with everything going on in the world, one of the things I've been thinking a whole lot about is that concept of, in a sense, confusing content with form. Because, in fact, obviously, somebody had, you know, I'm on different email chains, and somebody had sent me this, and it said, stop calling for unity. I'm not uniting with racist terrorists or with people who remain quiet when children are caged. And, of course, I wanted to go, amen. But the dilemma, actually, literally, when I got that text, is I thought, you know, it immediately occurred to me, no, in form, I do not want to unite with that. This is what I had been struggling with. Why would I want to unite with that? But recognizing we're not talking, when we talk unity or we are one from a spiritual perspective, we're not talking about joining with bodies. Okay. And yet, we're living these lives. Ken always says to us, be normal. You know, we are living lives believing that we're in the body. And this, I think, is a very challenging time to figure out how to maintain or how to hold on to those moments every single day where you realize there is a difference between our identification with body and our identification with spirit. And so when you suggested this lesson, I was just like, I don't want to trust my brothers. I don't trust them. But of course I said, yeah, absolutely. This is the lesson we probably need to talk about. And probably especially from the perspective that we're not talking about joining with them in form. You know, we're not talking about trusting our brothers' egos. And so, Susan, thank you so much, as always, for being so provocative and for joining me on the show today. So where were you coming from when you chose this lesson?
Well, I think, you know, similarly, really wanting to renew the point of the course, which is really the, you know, discovering our innocence. Our shared innocence at a level that, you know, we're no longer in touch with. And the course's formula is we do that through recognizing that we're wrong about, you know, about our brothers, about what we're blaming them for. Because what we're really blaming them for is not whatever hateful sorts of behavior we see in them as bodies, but for the, you know, that is a projection of the attack that we all parts of the decision-making mind that we no longer remember we are, all parts of our mind, you know, have taken seriously the belief that we attacked God. And everything that we're experiencing from the Course's perspective is an outside picture of that inner unconscious, now unconscious condition. And so, you know, you're absolutely right. On the level, in the condition we think we're in, we can't trust each other as bodies, or, you know, as personal selves, because we've all bought into the ego thought system of one or the other, and all believe that our preservation as personal selves demands that I position myself as the more innocent one and I need others, you know, to around me to call the more guilty ones, you know, that the ego agenda that we all have within us that drives us is for all of us the same, to prove that we exist, but we exist truly apart from God, which is not true, but to prove that it is, that it is real, and but it's not my fault.
Right, and there's somebody to blame.
It's somebody else's fault. And so we have, you know, we have all these others around us. And the truth is, you know, in this dream of a world of bodies apart from God, guilty bodies, you know, that we all shared in this sin. I mean, there's only relative innocence. No one's really innocent here, but in the dream. But you know, I want to try to manipulate myself to look to be the less guilty one. And I need villains around me. I need to be pointing the finger outside me in order to pretend that, that I'm the innocent one, you know? And it seems very convincing. But what we don't want to look at is that we're all, you know, that all of us are doing the same thing, that we all share that desperate need to blame each other. And you know, we may act it out in different ways, but we're all, you know, we're all suffering from that same delusion, and we really are suffering. It's miserable, and you know, what we're seeing is an outside picture of our self-hatred over that belief. And so, I trust my brother. When we say I trust my brothers who are one with me, what we're trying to learn through the course is you know, well, to first look at how much we don't trust ourselves, because, you know, we don't trust our brothers because we don't trust ourselves, because we believe that we did attack God. You know, this is, again, a reflection, a projection of that guilt in my mind that I'm putting on them. But it's the same guilt that I see in me that I don't want to look at. And so we can't really trust each other as bodies, but we can learn that we, you know, that what we really share, the shared interest that we have in, you know, finding our way home to a love that is not of this world.
Right.
And so, you know, that is the lonely state that everyone here is walking around in, believing that we are all aliens from love here. And so the trust is really is about learning that we share the interest in finding our way home, and we also share, you know, we share an ego, we share the ego thought system when we've chosen it as our teacher, but we also share this presence of enduring, all-inclusive love and peace and kindness in our mind, that the Course is, you know, represents it, symbolizes it with Jesus Holy Spirit as Jesus Holy Spirit. But that's just that memory of wholeness in our mind that's still part of us that could not be you know, completely forgotten or extinguished in any way. It's still very alive and reflects the truth in us, which is that we're still one with God on the, you know, the truth, the level of truth. And so the trust that we're learning is really to begin to trust in that part of our mind to help us to see our brothers and our, which is how we learn to see ourselves differently, to help us see that this guilt, this excruciating guilt that we try to keep, you know, going and nourishing in them, which only, you know, hoping to get rid of it, which only nourishes it more powerfully in ourselves, you know, that we're wrong about that, and that really the need of every heart that we do really share, no matter, you know, what side, in quotes, we seem to be on of any relationship, you know, what we really share is the need to learn that we're wrong about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that is the purpose and the practice of A Course in Miracles, to make our lives a classroom about, you know, learning to trust what's real in us and learning to distrust the teacher, you know, learning to recognize that we've chosen the ego when we have, when we're suffering, when we're angry, when we're depressed, when we're, you know, the world seems too much with us, and it seems to be somebody else's problem, you know, to really learn that we're wrong about the cause of that, and that we do have the power to experience it differently, and to begin to heal our mind, because we're all part of that tortured split mind over believing that we, you know, pushed love away, that we ran away from God. You know, that part of our mind, we all are deeply, really invested in learning we're wrong about healing. And so, that's, you know, that's what we want to learn. That's what the practice of forgiveness, which is this questioning every time we find ourselves in that anxious, despairing, angry, condemning kind of state, to really stop ourselves and say, you know, I'm not upset for the reason I think, lesson five. There's something, you know, maybe I'm wrong about the cause of this, because the Course is, you know, I'm a Course student, and the Course is telling me that the path to peace lies in a different direction, lies in going back to my mind and choosing a different teacher, a different perception, a healed perception. And that's something that I can do in any moment, and I will have a different experience of not just the other person, but of me. I mean, that's really, you know, of myself, because we really are the same. The hatred that I'm seeing in them is only a reflection of the hatred that I'm making real in myself and afraid to let go of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why really I chose this lesson, because I think the deep need for healing that everybody's talking about right now is not, as you said earlier, it's not going to happen between bodies. We don't share interests in philosophy necessarily, or in you know, our political views, or in even, you know, what we think needs to happen to heal. But we do share the teacher of healing in the mind, and that we can all unite with, and learn that, you know, learn a different experience of ourselves and each other that will lead us to be more tolerant, to be more accepting, to remember that we're all frightened children, and to recognize within ourselves, you know, I have an ego too, and I'm nasty when I have an ego, mm-hmm. really nasty. I may not be capable of, you know, a violent, you know, physical violence, but I'm certainly capable of mental violence, and I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to see that there's no real difference in that from the, you know, in a spiritual perspective, that violence is violence, and it all comes from the violent thought that we, you know, that we attacked God, and we're wrong about that. It's an impossible dream, and, you know, nobody's really guilty of that. And so we're deeply rooted in this dream of violence, but we can begin to move up the ladder that separation seemed to lead us down by this moment to moment practice. And this lesson really emphasizes how in every moment we can make a different choice.
Yes.
Very present. It's very much about the bondage that we of time, which is part of the ego thought system, and how we're, you know, we're basically hypnotizing ourselves with past and future thoughts. But that right now, in any moment, I can choose a different direction, a different teacher, a different experience.
Yes. Well, and you know, you've hit upon so many excellent points, because there are so many good ones in this particular lesson. And I did go back and review Ken's notes on this particular workbook lesson.
Yes.
And so sometimes when I say it says this, this, and this, I forget. Was that Ken, or was that actually in the lesson itself? Which to me sometimes just becomes one.
Right.
You know, it's all together. But one thing that I was thinking as you were talking is that as I read a lot of Ken's material, or even as I read the Course, I tend to draw pictures. I keep a little notebook and I draw pictures, because somehow the pictures, it really gets it in my brain. I mean, and I remember the picture. And one of the pictures that I find myself drawing over and over, which, you know, really says to me, this is so, it's in the Course all the time, is how oneness split off into a million fragments. And that's our experience of all these millions of fragments. And when you said something about violence, and I'm not capable of that kind of violence, I thought I would sit here and say the same thing, and yet in on a spiritual level, it's not true at all, because I've split off all those fragments. And so now I have the fragment that would attack the Capitol. I have the fragment that would do this, the fragment that would do that. All those are my own projections of fragments of myself. And as I look at that, I mean, that's it. I want to think that all those pieces are separate. They have nothing to do with me. And yet they are all, in a sense, projections of my need to push that energy outside myself. That's not me. I'm not angry. I'm not evil. I'm not guilty. You know, all of those things, and push them onto all those fragments, and then say, look over there, look at this bad fragment, look at that bad fragment, and just forget that those are all my dream. They're all what I have pushed outward, and then I can blame each of those individual fragments for being so bad.
Right, right. But, you know, what needs healing is our belief that we really did it.
Yes, yes. You know? That it was even possible.
Right. You know, that's what we've forgotten. We forgot we made this up. And so we're rushing to, you know, judgment. Yes, we want it. We're trying to get rid of it outside of us. And again, that's how we position ourselves as the less guilty one, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, hoping that if we, mistakenly believing that God knows anything about any of this that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And making up a God in the ego's image that is now a punishing God, and trying to, you know, decide between who's the guilty one. And
right.
that's crazy. But that's the God of the Bible, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the God of most religions that does recognize sin as real. And you know, some are saved and some are condemned, and there's a hell and there's a heaven and all of that. So yeah, it's you know, we're always just trying to fragment and further fragment, and to keep us, the whole point of it is to keep us mindless, to keep us, you know, so engaged at going after each other in the dream, and also trying, you know, attacking each other and blaming each other so that we, for the guilt that we see outside ourselves and deny within. And then also greedily trying to snatch from each other the love we feel that is so lacking within us, to try to somehow substitute for the love of God that we think we, you know, is no longer available to us. So we're always seeking and never finding for relief from our guilt and to get our needs met. And both of those things are impossible between bodies. You know, I mean, Ken also about this lesson always used to say, you know, we don't trust our brothers. We don't, you know, invite a thief into our home, and, you know, who's been convicted of something like that, or an alcoholic, and leave all the alcohol out. And you know, we don't trust the best intentions of an ego. But again, we look at the shared interest that we have in the mind. So we're normal on the level of form, but we're trying to learn what really unites us. We use it, and the way that we do that is to make our relationships a classroom of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was gonna I mentioned my dog before we got on the call today, but when I was thinking about this lesson, I thought about I have a puppy, a Havanese puppy who's 8 months old now, and we got him in July, and he's a handful, and he's just really, really very energetic. And it's hard during a pandemic to give him enough stimulation with, he needs a, you know, he would love to have some playmates and all of that. But anyway, so I took him to a couple of puppy classes to try to, you know, learn the basics of training. And I remember the trainer saying that when we get an animal, when we first get our puppy, that to think of it as we have a trust bank, and every interaction with your puppy, with your new puppy, you're either putting money into the trust bank in how you behave with him, or you're withdrawing it. So, you know, So I immediately felt guilty because I was like, oh man, this puppy's bankrupt already, you know, like I'm not.
Well, and when you say the withdrawal, so you're saying you do something that makes the puppy not trust you?
Right.
Okay.
Right. You're either building his trust or you're eroding it, right?
Okay.
and so I was thinking, you know, that's what we're all kind of doing with each other as bodies, right? Mm-hmm. We're all, you know, nobody can meet our needs, and the relationship is really all about guilt, because again, we can't, you know, as bodies, we can't be perfect. Nobody can meet all of our needs. It's very similar to the parent-child relationship, which sets us up for all of our special relationships in our lives, right?
Right.
You know, which we're always pointing a finger at each other for not, you know, for damaging us somehow. And so, you know, but from the course's perspective, you know, my relationship with my puppy, and my puppy, because he's got a decision-making mind too, his relationship with mine are relationships that in the bigger picture we chose, and what we're really learning together through the relationship is, you know, that we have another part of our mind that does share an interest mm-hmm. in healing, you know, and so really we're, you know, we're learning that trust comes from a deeper part of us, and that when I am choosing, when I am looking at any reactions I'm having with my puppy's neediness, or, you know, interrupting me all day, or constantly needing more attention, or bite, chewing things up, or biting, or, you know, all the behaviors that puppies go through, to use that just like any other classroom as learning, you know, that again, that we have a part that it's my call for love. It's my mind in need of healing. So it really has nothing to do with the dog, you know?
Right.
And the dog is learning the same thing, really. You know, I just heard him the other day talk about how pets, if a pet is your primary special relationship, you can learn and practice the whole course with your pet. You know, it doesn't matter what, we practice it with the world. We practice it with our pets. We practice it with our parents. We practice it with the people we work with. We practice it with people, you know, that have already passed that we had trouble with. I mean, it's all happening right now. You know, and we're learning again, you know, which teacher in my mind do I want to trust, right?
Yes. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right. I'm sitting here thinking, I can't come up with a specific event, but, you know, I've always had dogs. Mm-hmm. And I do live alone. I guess I would say they are my primary mm-hmm. relationships. And it was not that very long ago when something went on that I felt like I had just, like, really gone out of my way. I think maybe it's because I was buying all these medications and mm-hmm. doing all these behaviors because I had a sick dog. And then she turned around and did something.
Right.
And I don't even remember what it was, but I remember literally out loud saying, really? After all the money I've spent, after,
right.
you know, all this stuff I'm doing, and now you want to eat a shoe? I mean, you know, it was sort of like...
Yeah.
I mean, I was just so mad at her, and maybe it had to do with she wouldn't eat the expensive dog food or whatever it was, but I remember, you know, if she had been a child, I would have literally said, oh, okay, just go to your room, because I remember thinking, I just need some distance from you. Right now, I am so angry because I am changing my schedule, buying all these expensive medications, or doing this, that, and the other thing, and this is how you reward me.
Right.
And of
it's
course,
just like a parent and child, yes.
Yes. And of course, I knew even at the time I was doing it, I felt so totally guilty.
Yeah.
But I still just said, you know what? I just need some space. I just need some space away from this, because this is so provoking me into feeling unappreciated, unloved.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it, just from some silly thing that the dog does.
Well, and then, you know, and what does that achieve for us? Now we're the victim of our dogs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, but that's the point of all relationships in this world, all special relationships is, you know, we're trading in guilt. I mean, that's what we do. And so if we take that to the collective, it's just exactly the same thing that we're doing. You know, the other side is responsible for our suffering.
Right. Well, and you know, something that you also mentioned that I wanted to address, that Ken talks a lot about with this lesson, is that, you know, he says Jesus is actually coming to you from a very selfish standpoint, saying, do this because it will make you feel better.
Absolutely.
And bringing up that idea that so much, and by the way, I mean, I think what's going on in our world right now is a perfect example of really getting into this, is that we don't change when we're happy. We don't have too much reason to start being self, you know, evaluative or looking inside of ourselves when everything is going well. And, you know, so Ken points out that literally Jesus is practically pleading with us. Can you see how unhappy this makes you? Can you really look at what you're saying, what you're doing, this need to blame your brother, this need to attack and make everybody else wrong? He goes, can you see how unhappy it makes you?
Right.
You know, and what is the cost? You know, you had put it in terms of, you know, maintaining or protecting this sense of being an individual.
Mm-hmm.
What is the cost that we are willing to pay to make that happen? And you know what it is? It's what you said, suffering.
Right.
You know, it's right. Suffering. Right. That's the cost that we're willing to pay.
And really beginning to see that connection between my suffering and my need to condemn my brother. And so you know, the cost that's what's really causing my suffering, right? Is my need to blame, to put the guilt out there and experience it in them, means that I've already condemned myself for that, for that guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my self-hatred again. And so we have to begin to make that connection and recognizing that this is hurting me, and that it doesn't help. It makes it worse. Is the beginning of the spiritual journey, is the invitation to the Holy Spirit, Jesus tells us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that is when I have to sit, you know, that's what, think of Helen and Bill, what brought the Course into the scribing was that, you know, recognition that of Bill and saying to Helen one day, you know, there has to be another way, a better way of us relating to each other here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this sucks. I mean,
it sucks.
That I'm paraphrasing there, but you know, it's not serving us, you know?
Right. Well,
we can agree on that.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, we can agree on that.
Yes. And I want to read the second paragraph. I mean, I know there's a lot of good
stuff
in here, but
let's start reading it. It's a beautiful lesson.
Do you want to go before paragraph two?
I
mean, I don't want to get things out of order, but I just knew I highlighted that. I thought that was so important.
Yeah, no, that, let me read the first one and then.
Okay, and then I'll read the second.
Away,
okay.
Read the second. Trusting your brother, because this is just introducing it. Mm-hmm. So I trust my brothers who are one with me, lesson 181. Trusting your brothers is essential to establishing and holding up your faith in your ability to transcend doubt and lack of sure conviction in yourself. When you attack a brother, you proclaim that he is limited by what you have perceived in him. And what I perceive in him is guilt. The guilt I don't want to see in myself. You do not look beyond his errors. Rather, they are magnified, becoming blocks to your awareness of the capital S self, the real self, one with God, that lies beyond your own mistakes and past his seeming sins, my brother's seeming sins, as well as yours.
Right, which very much is what you were talking about before, you know, blaming other people or seeing sin in somebody else is just
right.
a convenient way to
right.
project it outside yourself
when
it's really ourselves.
Way, there's no way I can find peace and feel okay about myself. I mean, that's what, you know, brings us to this finally, this awareness by making someone else guilty. Whenever I'm doing that, I'm not going to be at peace.
Right.
It's going to make me anxious because that guilt is coming, is always coming right back at me.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Okay. And in paragraph two, I think this first sentence is one of the most important.
Mm-hmm.
It's another way of saying in the Course when it says purpose, purpose, purpose. It's
right.
everything. So it says perception has a focus, you know, and to me too, that's like, and has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It is this that gives consistency to what you see. change but this focus, and what you behold will change accordingly. Your vision now will shift to give support to the intent which has replaced the one you held before. Remove your focus on your brother's sins, and you experience the peace that comes from faith in sinlessness. This faith receives its only sure support from what you see in others' past, or in others past their sins. For their mistakes, if focused on, are witnesses to sins in you, and you will not transcend their sight and see the sinlessness that lies beyond. Now, I mean, that's a lot of words, and it's still, but to me, it just so comes down to, you're living your life on purpose. You're choosing your intention. And if your intention is to maintain yourself, maintain your ego self, that's your intention. You're holding that purpose. And to do that, you need to look at the sins in other people. You need to believe that they're there. And, you know, what this doesn't say, but it's certainly implied, is you will see what you're looking for.
Right.
You will see it. If that's your intention, that's what you're going to find. That's what you're going to see. But if you can consciously change your purpose, change your focus, then you will have a different intention.
Right.
And you'll see mistakes instead of sins.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, when he says perception has a focus, well, to see guilt, to make the body and the world real, right?
Mm-hmm.
To see or put our guilt there, to project our guilt on. Change but this focus back to the mind, right? Back to the decision-making mind, and choose a different teacher. And what you behold will change accordingly. Your vision now will shift to give support to the intent, to healing the split mind, right? To healing the guilt, which has replaced the one you held before, which was to keep myself rooted in the dream of sin, guilt, and fear, and make it real.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's not my fault, right? All of that we're talking about.
Right, so, and in fact, this is a great paragraph, I think, on responsibility.
Yep.
Saying, you know what? Nobody else out there is responsible. This is your intention. This is your focus. This is your purpose.
Yep.
Just accept that that's your purpose. And if that's your purpose, okay. But
right.
don't think it came from anybody but yourself.
Right. I mean, my only healing purpose, you know, is to again, you know, make my life a classroom of true forgiveness, in which I begin to see our shared interest in you know, discovering our sinlessness,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And discovering that we're wrong about ourselves.
Right.
That's healing. And that can't come from me alone. I mean, it just can't. It's impossible for me alone to feel sinless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to include, you know, all of my imaginary others in my dream. You know, I can't be excluding anyone from it.
Right. And then I'm going to go ahead and skip, because I'm afraid we won't have time to read all of this. Maybe we would, but if we skip one paragraph and go to the next, because truthfully, when I read this again, I went, what? Okay, wait, where are we going here? It says, a major hazard to success has been involvement with your past and future goals. You have been quite preoccupied with how extremely different the goals this course is advocating are from those you held before. And you have also been dismayed by the depressing and restricting thought that even if you should succeed, you will inevitably lose your way again. And there again, I guess I kind of got stuck on that going, oh, well, a major hazard to my success is having a goal, you know. But of course, I was missing the point, because it's really bringing us back to the past and the future is an avoidance of what's going on now. And as long as we let the past shade the present, and then always projecting things into the future, we're never really in this present moment, which is where the holy instant can be experienced.
That's right. Which when we're outside of, you know, basically time and space, the dream of time and space, in that holy instant, and that's where we share interests. You know, that's where we see that, oh, no one's guilty.
Right.
we're experiencing, and you know, as Jesus does in that moment. And also that your involvement with your past, with that belief in sin in the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this really happened, and your future, that I'm guilty and deserve punishment. that's what we're always trying to, you know, defend against, right?
Right.
That I'm going to be discovered for the guilty imposter that I believe I am. Right?
Yeah. And the truth is, we are so trapped by this whole concept of time. I recognize that.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I can hear somebody going, oh, well, we have to have goals. Why wouldn't we have goals?
But, it's,
you
know, talking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of missing the point,
yes,
of saying that, don't you recognize the present moment is nothing but, you know, basically shades of what you believe and interpret for the past, or what you think is going to happen in the future, which is whatever we did in the past makes us guilty. And so the future is going to be avoiding God because he's going to get us. Right?
That's right.
So
that's right.
We're constantly trying to avoid, you know, what do they call it? The second foot coming down, or now I can't even remember what it was. But you know, right, what I'm saying? We're trying to avoid, right, some kind of punishment.
Right.
And yet we're so oblivious to that's what we're really doing, that we're never really living authentically or in the moment. There,
right,
is no present moment that isn't somehow shadowed by those two things, the past or the future.
But remember that the Course meets us where we are in the condition we think we're in. So the Course is very practical, and it tells us, I think it's in lesson 195, that the kind use of time is forgiveness. So, you know, again, the purpose, the new purpose of our lives becomes, as we go through all of the roles that we play, the work we do, the families that we're in, the relationships that we're in, the, you know, all of the things that we have to do to keep our bodies going, to pay our taxes, you know, to make a living, all of that. The kind use of time is to make every day, you know, as I go through my day in every moment, a classroom of forgiveness, which means paying attention to when I become upset, when I become angry, when I'm projecting, basically.
Mm-hmm.
To notice when I'm reacting to someone and blaming my loss of peace on someone else, and to stop myself and take a moment internally and say, you know what? That cannot be. I must have already chosen to, you know, to accuse myself. Of you know, to feel guilty myself, and to you know, align with that guilt in my mind, or I would never be experiencing it, the problem in someone else.
Right.
I mean, people do what they do, and bodies, you know, all of us are fighting a hard battle here, and you know, can be very unkind, as we were saying earlier, but that would not have the power to take my peace away unless I had already given it the power. And felt defensive again and needed to, again, portray myself as the less guilty one.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when you say that, I don't know if that's in Ken's notes or where, but I had this kind of visceral reaction when I saw that line that said, time is kind.
Right.
It's like, I'm like, oh, no, it's not.
You know, but it can
time
be.
Is, I know, of course it can be, but of course I'm like going, what do you mean time is kind? No,
right.
It's not. Just look at our world in
right.
terms of, or aging is what I was really
right.
thinking.
Right.
Time
yeah.
has not been particularly kind.
Yeah, don't look in the mirror. It's not about that.
Oh, boy.
No,
if you,
I mean,
yeah.
It's all about purpose.
Yes,
know?
Yes. And that's it. Every single moment. In fact, I want to read something. This is actually from text chapter 15, but it's something Ken writes in his notes while discussing this lesson. And it says, the Holy Spirit would undo all of this now. Fear is not of the present, but only of the past and future, which do not exist. There is no fear in the present when each instant stands clear and separated from the past without its shadow reaching out into the future. Each instant is a clean, untarnished birth in which the Son of God emerges from the past into the present, and the present extends forever. It is so beautiful and so clean and free of guilt that nothing but happiness is there. No darkness is remembered, and immortality and joy are now.
Mm.
And I like that because, once again, I'm like, how can you possibly say the present? There's no fear in the present. I feel pretty present and I feel fearful.
Right.
But then when it gives the definition, if
right.
you can take the now, and see it as a moment out of time and space. There is no connection to the past. There is nothing to fear in the future. Then there is no fear in the present.
Right. We have to unite with that teacher in the mind that does experience it that way. You know, there's a part of us that does experience it, you know, peace now, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's total innocence.
Right.
And it's just that we've so distanced ourselves deliberately from that voice, you know, that's always calling to us from that awareness. And so this is a practice, you know, at the level that we're in, which seems to be within this dream, the way that we use it, you know, the kind use of time is forgiveness, is to make our lives, the purpose of our lives, a classroom of forgiveness.
Right.
And everything that happens, all of my relationships, all of my roles are part of my curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have this part of our mind that we have to be in touch with and realigning with again and again and again, because we don't understand this by ourselves. We can't. You know, everything within the ego thought system is fighting against it, you know, with every breath down to the dying breath.
Right, right.
And so we have to, you know, that's that development of trust that the manual for teachers talks about. And you know, this whole path, this whole journey, seeming journey, is a development of trust in that teacher, and a gradual withdrawing our trust in the ego, really beginning to see, by looking with Jesus at what we're doing, that the ego thought system is not serving us. It actually is the cause of our suffering.
Right.
And we've made it real, and we've made, you know, we're the ones who've you know, required that we be, that we, you know, adhere to this propaganda of the egos, and we've made it up and we've believed it. I mean, you could think of it as a conspiracy theory, you know?
Yes, and it is quite the conspiracy.
Right, or many theories, but mm-hmm. but it's all propaganda for itself, but that doesn't make it real.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we have to discover that. We have to be taught that, because we have to unlearn what we've taught ourselves, which is unreal.
Right. Well, and you know, one other thing that comes up in here to me, which is one of the points, and here again, I get it from reading Ken's material, is that Jesus is not asking for total dedication. He knows this can be a slow, steady process. And so even in this lesson, they use the words little focuses.
Yeah.
It, you know, can you do this? Can you have a little focus? Can you do it for a moment? Can you do it for a few moments today? Which also brings to mind one of my favorite lines, and I think it's from one of the workbook lessons, but I never can remember. And it's a line, why wait for heaven?
Mm-hmm.
And when I read this lesson, that's exactly what kind of kept going through my, or not kind of, it kept going through my mind. Why do I feel like I have to wait? And putting it on a more mundane level, you know, I think about, you know, all the challenges that we're facing, and we do it spiritually and we do it physically. Like, okay, well, when the election's over, or when this happens, when, you know, personally, I've been going through a lot of medical issues in my family. So when my sister gets out of the hospital, when we can figure out what the follow-up doctors say, when my parents can get this, when this happens. And I find that I'm always living for when this happens, then I can relax, or then I can be okay. Then I can really devote myself to the Course in Miracles or whatever it is. And it's like, no, you don't need to wait for heaven. There are little focuses there, you know, in this moment. You can have that moment and keep bringing your mind back to it. It doesn't require that you do it 24/7, but the more you do it, you will make that association between letting go of grievances makes me happy.
Right. Absolutely. Right? And that's a great point that, you know, the world is always going to be problematic. Our lives are always going to be problematic. I mean, we know, you know, at this point in our lives, we should begin to at least have had enough experience to realize that you know, it's never, it's always something, right?
Yes.
And so there's never a time, you know, I think everybody can relate to what you're saying, Sia. We all do that. And especially this last, few years, and this last year especially, you know, where we're just, well, when they get a vaccine, when they get this.
Yes.
you know, I'm still doing it. But no matter, you know, as we go through our very difficult at times and always problematic lives, the truth is that we can still have a different experience. We can still experience peace. We can still experience safety and support. We can still experience comfort. We can still experience kindness toward ourselves and others. And we can be we can be making our lives meaningful by practicing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is the only thing that really brings meaning to our lives is reveals a different life to us.
Yes.
Beyond this. But you know, for now, is really brings an organizing purpose and meaning to our lives, which is learning that I have a choice about which teacher I go through this, and that will determine how I feel.
Right.
You know, I can have a different experience, and my different experience will heal other minds because it will be conveying to them on a level beyond words that they too have that opportunity and same power within their own decision-making mind to have a different experience.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and when we do that, when we have those moments, it's we know it's everything we want. I mean, it really is a healed experience. That's the holy instant when we have that sigh of relief that we're wrong. We're wrong about this.
Right. Well, and to kind of bring this full circle, you know, coming back to that idea, the idea of trusting our brothers.
Yes.
Trusting the world has nothing to do with the physical form.
No.
It has to do with the experience that we have. And you're right. That peace that we can feel, we would never, I mean, we could talk until we're blue in the face and we couldn't convey that to somebody in form, but we can convey it through a spiritual essence. And in the same way, I mean, I think about it, you brought up dogs or, you know, with children, we've probably all had that experience. And I know this is on form, but I think it gets close as an analogy that a dog will pick up our anxiety.
Absolutely.
Or a dog will pick up our trust. Like you were talking about the mm-hmm. building of trust. And,
right.
you know, you don't get that through words. You get
mm-hmm.
that through an inner being that somehow then is in the collective consciousness. And so we may not be able to come to peaceful terms, you know, talking to a neighbor who's completely on the, you know, on a different planet, we think, you know what I mean? But it doesn't mean that we can't convey on a spiritual, on some other level, I accept you, I love you, and or I trust
right.
you. But it doesn't mean, once again, that we're going to let that person direct the form in our lives.
No, and it doesn't mean that we wouldn't put restraints or, you know, again,
right.
it wouldn't be normal on behavior that's, you know, over the top or threatening to me or someone else or whatever.
Right.
But it would mean that we're conveying what I think you were saying, too, is to each other on some level that no matter what you do in form, you know, it doesn't change our love for each other.
Right.
You know, it can't change that. I mean, ultimately, it can't change God's love for us.
Right.
And so, and also that, you know, we're the same. I have an ego, too.
Uh-huh.
And I understand, you know, I can become, when I've made that shift, I am defenseless in that
mm-hmm.
moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that defenselessness undoes defensiveness around me. It people can identify with that or not.
Right.
And that's their choice. Sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
But it is offered as a choice. It's demonstrated to teach in the course, in the manual tells us, is to demonstrate that I'm choosing the right mind. You know?
Right.
And
remembering that too, that we, like, you know, every once in a while run along something that Ken says along the lines of, your behavior may change or maybe it won't.
Right.
You know, that this isn't about behavior.
It's not so, about changing. Right.
Yeah, and you can have a change, you know, to the right mind, and that right. may or may not change your behavior. That's right. not the indication of whether or not there has been a return to the right mind.
And that's true with ourselves and with others. It may mm-hmm. not change our behavior for, you know, for a very long time, or maybe not at all. You know?
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
not, but that's not the point. This isn't right. ever about behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. and I think that's one thing that, especially studying this discipline, is important to me when I'm trying to figure things out, or, you know, things just kind of seem crazy, is to remember that we have these really caca ideas about what love means.
Right.
And to have somebody say, well, that's not loving, that's not unity. And just, I keep saying to myself, they're talking form.
Mm-hmm.
They're not talking content. And don't expect them to talk content. You know,
right.
that's, you don't have that expectation that somebody is going to be able to make that differentiation.
No.
And if you start talking to them about it, they're going to think you're crazy, and you are crazy.
Right.
So, you know, but just remembering that, and like I said, kind of bringing it full circle to that text I got about, I don't want unity with all these people. You know, I quite honestly, Susan, I wasn't sure how to respond to that, because I thought, do I go, hey, thumbs up, yeah, I don't want unity either, or do I kind of say, yeah, but how else can we find unity? And like I said, I decided in the moment I didn't want to start preaching A Course in Miracles, that would right. not have been an appropriate behavior. But, you know, I think we're going to have lots of opportunities. I know we are, in the future, to continue to just always be looking at not defining loving behavior by the world's standards, and
right.
relying on finding our spiritual connection and letting the love extend or flow based on that, and not trying to define it.
Right. And really paying attention again. You know, this, I don't think we can go wrong if we just keep remembering that this is a course, you know, that the practice of this is only and always about the healing of my own mind.
Yes.
Any call for love is my call for love, and I've got to take responsibility for 100% for my reactions. You know, that's a full-time job in itself. I don't have to.
Yeah.
That's monitoring anybody else's. You know, I mean, it's a full-time job in itself to really, again, if my purpose is really to heal, then, you know, I have my work cut out for me, because I find myself having lots of ego reactions still.
Yes.
And so I need to, you know, that means that a part of me really, I really hate myself for
mm-hmm.
what I think I, you know, what I'm not aware of in myself, that false belief of, that, you know, that we destroyed love.
Right.
And so, you know, I really, it's in my own best interest to learn otherwise, to learn, you know, I really want to learn what true forgiveness means. And I really want to discover that I'm not the home of evil, darkness, and sin.
Right.
You know, and I need help with that. And
mm-hmm.
so it's that humility every day to say, you know, I have a lot of, I'm not as far along as I think.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and I'm kind of chuckling, because this week in particular, people have been sending me a lot of links to, oh, go try this course, go check out this, this'll, you know, this is the key to happiness and everything else. And I want to just go, are you kidding? I've got my plate full. I'm just trying to learn shared interests here.
Right.
You know, and in some ways, I love that about A Course, that I really do feel like it will take the rest of whatever time I have to figure
yeah.
out shared interests. And I feel perfectly content with that as my curriculum. So it's
right.
like, you know what? I got my plate full, people. It doesn't mean I won't ever check out anything, but I'm not looking, you know?
Well,
I'm trying to figure out this.
And we have so much support within us, you know? I
mm-hmm.
mean, we don't avail ourselves enough of that loving teacher within us. We're still afraid. We're still
right.
developing trust. But you know, I think we can lean into that love a little more. Maybe we can, you know, want to trust more, ask for help
yes.
with trusting more.
Yes. Yeah, so that when Susan Dugan says, hey, CA, I want to do this lesson on trusting my brothers, I don't go, what? What is she talking about? What do we want to do this for? So, Susan, thank you so much, you know, for being such a wonderful teacher and mentor to me. And, aww. I mean, because it's all about me, Susan. But I really do appreciate that we've got this back together and that you're on the show today. And before we end, would you like to make any announcements or tell us about anything that's coming up for you?
No, you know, things aren't... There's not anything really coming up. I'm still teaching on Tuesday nights online, and which has been wonderful. And you know, this has been, I have to say that as difficult as this last year has been, as you were saying, boy, it pushed us to really go deeper, mm-hmm. I think. And I think great healing is happening. I think it's very true that we don't confront this until we're really pushed. And we've been really pushed.
Yep.
But that's a blessing. And I mean, it really is. I know that sounds cliche, but it has been in my experience that, you know, so much of the time when we think we're right-minded, it's just because things are going pretty smoothly in our lives.
Yeah. And,
that has not been the case this last year.
No, that has not been the case. No, it has not. All right. Well, everybody, you can find Susan at her blog website, which is www.forayasinforgiveness.com. And forays is Forayas. So forayasinforgiveness.com. And she does have that incredible Tuesday night meeting that you do on Zoom, right?
Yes.
I
just started shifting from Skype to Zoom, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that. I saw your latest, because I always get your notices, and so I always keep up with what you're doing. And you said something about now you're doing it on Zoom and can include more people.
It's not about that. We're just hoping to improve the quality.
Oh, improve the quality. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's a journey too.
All right. Well, if anybody is interested in that, I'm sure you can connect with Susan through that website. And if not, then just let me know, because I can certainly put you in touch with her. And I know that some of you, you know, you have already told me that you're in her Tuesday night group. So that's wonderful. So, Susan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I always love it.
And to all our fellow listeners and students, thank you for being here. Remember, you can find me on onetolisten.com, and you can also find me on Tuesdays for my other show, Simple Tales, in which we talk astrology, one of those wonderful illusions that I love to talk about, even though I know it's an illusion. But thank you so much for being here. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about trusting your brothers.